Well, if you're here and maybe this is your first time, or you've been kind of coming and going and you haven't been totally tracking as to what we've been doing as a congregation through our teaching time, we've been working our way through the Gospel of Matthew. So there's four gospel stories in the scriptures, and the first one is Matthew, and we've really been spending time learning about what it means to follow Jesus as his disciple. We really began back at Christmas time when we talked about the birth of Jesus Christ and what it all meant. We kind of shifted into his baptism and what that looked like and what it meant. From there, we looked at the temptation that Jesus had, which really kind of paves the way for all of us as we find ourselves trying to follow God and yet constantly being tempted to go our own way. From there, we kind of started looking at the ministry of Jesus, calling ordinary people to follow him with all of their heart, with all of their soul, with all of their mind, with all of their being, and calling ordinary people like you and like me to walk with him and to do what he did. And what did he do? Well, he taught other people how to love God and how to love other people. He proclaimed the good news of the kingdom, and he healed people from their sickness and their disease. And in all of this, what Jesus was doing was emphasizing that he truly was the Messiah that had come to bring salvation to all people. Salvation for our sin, for our brokenness, for us missing the mark. And that's what we remembered last Sunday, last weekend, as we thought about the cost of our salvation, Jesus' death on the cross, but we also celebrated the reality of Jesus Christ rising from the grave, which gives us hope and life. So as Jesus went about his ministry, the scriptures tell us that the crowds grew quite substantially, and there were usually several different kinds of groups in the crowd. We know that one of the big groups was religious leaders who didn't like Jesus. Religious leaders of the day included Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, all kinds of small kinds of groups, often coming from a Jewish background. And the religious leaders in the scriptures are known primarily as people who resisted Jesus, who did not like him. Then there was another group of people, a pretty large group of people, which we would call curious folks. And these curious folks often thought that Jesus, his personhood and his teaching was intriguing. And in any church today, Westwood Church, I would suspect that there are some of you here that find yourself in that crowd. You're curious about Jesus and about who he said he was and what he did. And those curious folks oftentimes stayed around for a little bit, but they didn't necessarily stay forever. And then there was a third group of people who became known as his disciples. People who actually said, yes, I want to follow Jesus with my whole life, and I'm willing to obey him no matter what the cost. But that group of people actually wasn't all that large. And in Matthew chapter 11, where we left off a couple of weeks ago, just before Easter, Jesus actually appeared frustrated that more people didn't respond to the good news of the kingdom that he himself proclaimed, modeled, and taught. He performed miracles, people saw it with their own eyes, he healed people, and people would reject him outright. A lot of the religious folks, or they would kind of smile and wave, or maybe yawn and just kind of move on. It was hard to imagine for even Jesus to think, wow, I teach this, I live this, I do these amazing things, and yet it just falls on deaf ears. And it frustrated Jesus. You can read Matthew 11 and 12. I won't do that today. But if you read Matthew 11 and 12, you kind of get a sense for how Jesus felt. But when I think about Jesus' frustration, would that be any different than some of our experiences? And I'm talking now about the experiences of those who would say, we're following Jesus, seeking to do so faithfully, not perfectly, but we're trying to walk with him. We're trying to kind of share the good news and do what he did. And yet, we wonder sometimes if it's making any difference. I've wondered that as a pastor. How is it that I can do some of these things? I can preach the good news, I can counsel people, I can guide them, I can encourage them, and I can do that over many, many years. And for some people, I go, why doesn't it seem to make sense? Why haven't they ever made the shift? You probably can think of a person in your life, maybe a family member, maybe a friend, maybe a coworker, a fellow student, who has heard the message of Jesus, who has witnessed the life change that's happened in your life, maybe in other people's lives around them. Maybe they're curious and they've asked many questions. Maybe some of them have even seen, witnessed astounding and unexplainable things unfold in their life, yet it just doesn't take root within them. Like that can be really, really challenging. What do you do? Do you stop talking to them? Do you stop praying for them? Do you kind of throw up your hands and say, phew, like, enough of you? Like, just stomp your feet and walk away? Like, how do you respond as a disciple of Jesus? How does a local church respond when they seek to do the things that Jesus was all about, and yet they may not always see the fruit? Well, Jesus was clearly frustrated, but he didn't let the frustration get the better of him. He didn't throw up his hands and say, it's hopeless, I'm out of here, I'm done. No, what Jesus did, because Jesus is Jesus, he actually told a bunch of stories, parables they're called in the scriptures, and he shared these stories to his disciples to help them understand what's really going on in the kingdom of God. Like when you go about living this life following Jesus and you're living out the good news, you're proclaiming good news, you're being obedient to Jesus, you're witnessing him do amazing things, and you're going about these things, and yet you don't necessarily see anything going on, Jesus reminds us as to how we are to respond, and he reminds them what's going on in the kingdom, and he reminds them as to what's going on within them and how they are supposed to actually respond to people. So he starts with this story that's actually quite familiar. You may have heard of it. It's called the parable of the four soils. The parable of the four soils. It's found in Matthew chapter 13, if you have your Bibles. And Jesus shares this story of a farmer scattering seeds. And this is what he says to his disciples. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil where it produced a crop, 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. And then Jesus said this, whoever has ears, let them hear. Now, this is one of the more familiar parables or stories that Jesus taught, and on the surface, it sounds kind of basic. And Jesus goes on and he describes it through Matthew chapter 13. If the farmer represents those who carry the good news and who share the good news of the kingdom, and the seed represents the good news that disciples live out, and if the soils represent different kinds of receptivity to the message that we share, then it logically implies that as his disciples, we are to take the good news of Jesus, and as we go about sharing this good news, as we go about living it out with others, some people will reject it because their hearts are hard. Others will receive it with enthusiasm, but they will cool quickly because there is no depth. Still others will receive it, but they will allow other things in life to become greater priorities that will eventually just choke out the good news message. And then still others will receive the message, and as they begin to follow Jesus' teaching, no matter what the cost, then their life will evidence how the seed, the good news, is transforming them. It's a very straightforward understanding of this parable that Jesus teaches his disciples. And it's not wrong. Yet, even the disciples didn't fully understand it, which makes me think there's something more going on than what meets the eye at a surface level. You see, Jesus was a master storyteller. And often, he had twists in his parables, in his stories. And I think there's a twist in this parable once we look a little deeper and we ask a few questions of the parable. Here's the first question. Is the farmer foolish or competent? Is the farmer foolish or competent? I come from a grain farming background in the prairies, and we did everything we could to prepare the soil for seeding in the spring. Cultivation following harvest. Harrowing, which breaks the soil down and levels. Draining the low areas. All in preparation for spring, because we wanted the seed to get the best chance possible for success. So why in the world would a farmer knowingly seed a crop on hard ground? Why would a farmer knowingly seed on rocky, shallow soil where they know that it's not going to take any root? Why would a farmer seed on areas that have not been cleared of weeds? In other words, why would you waste good seed on bad soil? It seems a little odd. So, is this farmer that Jesus portrays in need of an agricultural lesson? Is the farmer foolish or competent? Second question we've got to ask ourselves as we look at this story, is there going to be more failure than success? See, this seems like a reasonable question because Jesus is essentially saying that when it comes to sowing the gospel seed, only a part of the field is good soil. So be prepared for a whole lot of failure. But it may also depend on how we interpret the yield of the good soil. Was the yield of the good soil a normal harvest? Or was it a superabundant harvest in the midst of so much bad soil the farmer had faced in the seeding process? See, depending on how one thinks about this, this could either be a competent farmer who counts on a typical harvest in light of the usual challenges of farming, or this could be a foolish farmer who counts on God to produce an abundant harvest despite all the challenges that come with the farming life, like weather and pestilence and plant disease, and for the Galilean farmer who is listening to this parable, even war. And then one last question for good measure. When did the farmer sow his seed? When did the farmer sow his seed in this parable? You see, the rainy season or late autumn was the general practice for seeding one's crop in the Middle East. Then, through what we understand as the winter months, so like November, December, January, February, the crop would begin to grow, and then the late rain in spring would bring the crop to maturation, with harvest happening sometime in May, culminating with farmers bringing their first fruits of their crop as an offering to the festival in Jerusalem that we call Pentecost. But Jesus describes in this story of this fictitious farmer that the hot sun is scorching some of the seed, And the roots of the seed wither and are dying under the hot sun, suggesting something unimaginable to most. That the farmer had put in a second crop following the harvest. In a season when it was the driest and the hottest, putting his crop at risk of almost certain failure because the lack of rainfall needed to grow a crop. Who does this? What kind of farmer does this? Any Canadian prairie grain farmer would think this is the dumbest idea ever, Jesus. Like, what are you thinking? Why throw good money after bad? Don't you know that our margins are already razor thin? Why would we do this? Why invest in something that guarantees you're not going to get a crop and is only going to sink you in deeper debt? I think the Galilean farmers listening to Jesus may have had similar thoughts. Now, I've had to do a little bit of homework to understand and interpret this parable because of culture and context. But the disciples who heard this story initially would have connected the dots a little quicker, and they would have inferred that Jesus was comparing his kingdom work, scattering all that seed, going about life, proclaiming the good news, teaching as you go, showing people what loving God and what loving others are like. All that service to others. Prayer services, healing services, all those crowds with religious leaders who rejected him, all those curious onlookers who saw everything that he did and yet yawned and moved on. Jesus was comparing all of it to this unthinkable, risky second crop of a Galilean farmer who is counting on God to bring this miraculous harvest in the end. Who is counting on God to bring the rain. Who seeds a crop like this? Only a farmer who believes that despite all of the obstacles that come, all of the challenges, all of the risks that come in seeding a crop, in scattering the seeds of the gospel, of the good news, in spite of all that, their responsibility is to seed the crop on all kinds of soil and to trust God that he'll do the work in ensuring that that seed takes root as God brings the rain. Maybe imperceptibly at first, wondering, is this thing ever going to take root? Wondering if the priorities and the values of the person's life is ever going to shift? Wondering if the message is making sense? Wondering, is it worth it? Do I keep going? Yet trusting God that the seed that has been sown will grow into a harvest in the end because ultimately it is God's work. So when we think about this parable, how do we respond as a disciple of Jesus? How do we respond as a church family when we wonder if it's worth it to keep scattering the seed entrusted to us by the ultimate farmer? By the one who truly knows what farming is all about. And I think the response is actually quite simple. How do we respond to this parable, which on the surface seems kind of basic, and yet as we dig a little deeper, has a little more for us? We sow the gospel seed with foolish generosity on all kinds of soil, trusting God to bring in the harvest. That's what we do. On good soil, on hard soil, on thorny soil, on soil that's shallow and rocky, and we wonder if anything is ever going to happen. Yeah, we may wonder if at times it's worth it to sow the seed of God's love on the harder places in life and the harder areas of people. Yes, we may wonder if we should be strategic about using our resources to reach people for Jesus. And yes, we may wonder if it's wise or foolish to start a ministry when there doesn't seem to be a need. But here's the truth. The kingdom of heaven doesn't depend on efficiency to be effective. It doesn't depend on efficiency to be effective. It depends on faithful farmers willing to sow the seed wherever and whenever. See, the gospel seed is in endless supply, so nobody can waste it. We can't waste it. Even those who share the good news at the wrong time with the wrong people. You ever done that? Jesus got frustrated with the lack of results he saw, but he taught his disciples to sow the seed regardless, being foolishly generous on all kinds of soil, and let God, the master farmer, take care of the results. I have to be reminded of this constantly as a pastor when I wonder, is this making a difference? Yep, keep scattering the seed on all kinds of soil. And the same is true with you. Keep praying for your family member, your friend. Keep loving on them when they don't seem to be getting it. Even when it's hard and it doesn't seem like anything is happening. Let's keep receiving the immigrant coming from a different land who is searching for hope, regardless of their faith background and the things that are in their value system that would need to be worked out as they come to Jesus. Let's keep serving the hundreds living in the MCC apartments in our city, for they need the gospel of Jesus. Let's keep working in the healthcare system, in the educational system. Man, our nurses, our doctors, our teachers, our educators, they have a hard, hard ground to cultivate and to scatter seed in. Let's pray for them. Keep doing it. God is the one who is faithful. You're making a difference even when it appears to be very, very small. Let's keep serving our children, our youth, our young adults through Bible camps and through Bible colleges and through universities. Let's continue to sow the gospel seed with foolish generosity on all kinds of soil, because ultimately it's God's work and He is the one who's going to bring about the harvest.